Welcome, everyone. I am Bob Wurzelbacher, the director of the Respect Life Office for the Archdiocese of Cincinnati, and this is our video podcast series that we call Being Pro-Life. This is part of a series we're producing on the new ballot initiative in the state of Ohio coming in November of 2023 to amend the Ohio Constitution to include something called the right to reproductive freedom. In this series, we're going to discuss what the amendment actually says and why it is so dangerous for Ohio, and how you can get involved to educate the public. Today's guest is Rachel Setac. Rachel is a constitutional and civil rights attorney. She serves as president of Right to Life of Greater Cincinnati and owns and operates her own law firm representing pro-life parents, doctors, nurses, and health professionals protecting their constitutional rights. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bob.
I've talked with several people on this show about this amendment and just some of the many reasons why it's such a radical amendment that the vast majority of voters, if they know what this is really about, will be firmly against. It doesn't restore things to the way they were prior to the overturning of Roe v. Wade. It goes way beyond what Roe ever allowed. It allows abortion for virtually any reason up to the moment of birth. It threatens to take away laws that require centers to obtain parental consent or even notify parents of a minor seeking an abortion. It'll strip away many of the basic safety standards we have in place for women who seek an abortion at an abortion center. But we've talked about a lot of that on this podcast already. So today I want to focus on a couple of other things. In a recent article in the Cincinnati Enquirer, you talked about how this amendment language would make it easier for abusers and traffickers to continue manipulating young women by coercing them into abortions. I kind of want to focus on that first. That's a pretty bold claim. So why would this amendment do that?
Yeah. So when I was writing this article, this was in response to another op-ed that had been published by Al Gerhardstein. And he talked about what his Catholic mother taught him about abortion.
I read the article, yes.
Yeah. And I felt so disturbed by how this article truly painted the plight of women who are facing these difficult decisions. And so I really wanted to dig into a lot of this research that centers around talking to women who have been faced with the decision on abortion and who have also been victims of human trafficking. And as I'm following these through lines, I'm seeing that, as I'm sure you know, working in this space, 13% of Ohio's population is Black, but 40% of the abortions that happen in our state are performed on Black women. Right. And as I'm continuing the research, I'm finding that, you know, nationwide, we've got about 13% of a Black population. But then when we look at what percentage of human trafficking victims are Black, that again is around 40%. So I'm seeing these disproportionate percentages of Black women in these two categories of death and of commoditization really just intersecting here. And so what we see in a study that was carried out by Lederer is that when they interviewed women who have been the victims of human trafficking, they found that there was a disturbing trend in women who had been trafficked, who also described abortion as something that was coerced or forced. And so as we look at issue one and what this does to the entire matrix of Ohio's statutory scheme currently, we see that this issue one is opening the door to shield third parties like traffickers or abusers or anyone involved in seeking out an abortion for a trafficked woman or a minor. It shields those individuals and it pushes parents out of the way.
Thanks, Rachel. That's right. We look at the language right here. People might think this is 37 pages of legalese or something, and it's not. This amendment language is very short. You could put it on half of an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, you know, with very large font. It's very few words. And one of the sections, it's section two. It says the state shall not directly or indirectly burden, penalize, prohibit, interfere with, or discriminate, not only against an individual's voluntary exercise of this right, but a person or entity that assists an individual in exercising this right. So that's what you're talking about. It is literally protecting the person who brings that individual into the center to get an abortion or sits out in the car and waits, you know, who brought them there, whether that is a trafficker or an abuser or a coach, even. I mean, who knows what's going on without parental consent. Talk more about how those words, you know, as a lawyer, that's exactly what that's going to do.
Absolutely, Bob. And I think that it's so important for us to keep at the forefront of our minds that this is an industry. Abortion is an industry, and it cannot operate unless it has its operating expenses covered. And so when we look at this language that says that a third party who assists in an abortion is shielded, and we pair that with this right, that is where we see very careful crafting by ACLU attorneys that worked on this amendment. This is an ACLU-backed amendment that promises abortion through birth. How do we maximize profits? We maximize the amount of time that an abortion must be performed on a woman. And so when it says in this language that the state cannot interfere if a doctor who would be the abortionist, we have a conflict of interest there where the doctor performing the abortion can decide that it should be allowed through birth. And there is nothing that the state can do about that. They cannot interfere at all. It's also important to see that before viability, it says that the state may interfere. It doesn't say that the state has to. Right now, that we have statutes that are there, it's not promised. And what we're looking for in an amendment, if we're going to be setting up rights, if we're going to not protect minors, if we're not going to mention women, we need to see some parameters there, like the language that's already included in our statutory scheme. And it's just not there.
Let's get back for a second to the person that assists an individual exercising this right. So it's still going to be true that if someone's proved the crime, they're going to be committed for crimes, right? But how is it that that language right there, that we cannot interfere with the entity that assists an individual exercising that right, how does that make that easier for a woman who is being coerced or trafficked, or particularly underage woman? How does it make it even easier for them to abuse women moving forward if this constitution passes?
Right. So that word assist is something that we haven't seen in the statutory scheme before. And does assist mean that someone funds it? Does assist mean that someone gives her a ride to the clinic without her parents' permission? Does assist mean that someone is encouraging her to go forward with that? We don't really know what that word means. And so we see a future in Ohio where that could be used to protect, as you said, a soccer coach that brings a minor to the door of an abortion clinic, a pimp that funds an abortion. It could be an employer that pressures an employee to have an abortion. We're not really sure what that word means, but it definitely opens the door for traffickers who would be funding the abortion industry by paying for that abortion to be protected. Meanwhile, parents who would perhaps go to the police if they thought that something untoward was happening, they would not be in a position to be even aware that the abortion took place. We know that regardless of where someone falls, left or right, Democrat or Republican, parents want a say in these huge decisions that happen in their child's life. They want to say in the future of their child. But if they aren't even aware, if they don't even receive notification or consent for their child going to an abortion clinic, they have no way to take part or have a say in their child's future. We have a dense statutory scheme in Ohio that requires not only consent for the abortion, but also make sure that the parent has consent and notification for how the fetal remains during a minor's abortion are taken care of. We have statutory schemes that protect the fetal remains of an abortion and make sure that they find a final disposition that is humane and that is done with dignity. And if anything that's a burden or that interferes with the practice of abortion in Ohio is something that is prohibited, we are going to find all of those statutes done away with.
Wow. That's a good point as well about the parents. If a minor gets pregnant and is seeking an abortion, the fact that the parents currently would have to be notified, right? That opens up the door for, you know, like the parent's going to say, whoa, who was it? What happened? And then if there is a crime being committed, it's more likely that that could be exposed, right? But if the parents know nothing about it, if that minor is just brought into that center by the abuser and no questions are asked and the parents don't even find out that anything happened, then, of course, it's much more likely that that abuser is going to get away with this, because even just not having the parents involved in the first place, because they're the ones that are going to ask the questions that could lead to that. And you're right, this is not a partisan issue. Almost everybody recognizes that parents should have a say. and what's happening to their children. Let's bring up something else. I've recently heard the claim that this amendment language could lead to healthcare workers being forced to be involved in abortions in a way that violates their personal conscience. So is that true? And how does it that this amendment leads to that?
Absolutely. So when we see that a right is extended into the Constitution is what trumps everything else. And that includes the amendments that are contained in it. So right now we have statutes in place that protect a medical professional from participating in an abortion. They cannot be required to perform an abortion. However, if this becomes a right, no longer something that is a moral issue or religious issue, that means that ethics are in jeopardy for workers at medical facilities. That means that clients like my doctors that hold pro-life beliefs, clients like those that belong to the American Association of Pro-Life OB-GYNs and Gynecologists, they will be at risk for being required to perform abortions because it is that woman's right. It's no longer something that is only performed on a woman in the case of, as the Ohio Revised Code specified, the risk of immediate danger to a major organ or to her life. We no longer have that very specific exception. Instead, this is extended for a woman to have an abortion as her right up until the moment of birth, putting her in danger of dangerous abortion procedures through all 9 months. And really what we see is that this amendment really puts first the bottom line for abortion providers, even if it's at the expense of women. And we see that the health and safety regulations and even the ethical considerations all take a backseat to the special interests pushing these policies.
Right. So you think this could bring up issues of, for example, a Catholic hospital won't perform a sterilization, for example. And that could be considered a reproductive decision, I would think, right? Does it sound like something that a Catholic hospital could be sued for not performing a sterilization or some other kind of procedure that they don't do for religious and ethical reasons, and they would win because of the Constitution of Ohio?
Absolutely. So the same statutes that go about protecting medical professionals that do not wish to perform an abortion and cannot be required to perform an abortion, it also protects medical professionals from a right of action from someone suing because they refused to perform an abortion. It also protects medical professionals and public hospitals from being those admitting hospitals that have to take part in helping with an abortion or having a contractual relationship with another doctor that needs to have admitting privileges in order to perform an abortion and to have that access to emergency care. Additionally, Ohio has a lot of statutes in place that require mandatory reporting for child abuse or neglect. It defines and it designates doctors, nurses, social workers, police, all of them as mandatory reporters for child abuse or neglect. We also see that in Ohio statutes, it prevents hospitals from or abortion providers from trafficking the fetal remains. It makes sure that those fetal remains cannot be given or find a final disposition outside of cremation or interment by burial. There's also a statute that protects doctors, nurses, and hospitals from a very interesting right of action, which is where someone who is born or who has a child because of a failed abortion may attempt to sue the doctor because they were born or because their child was born. And we see that in Ohio statutes, that's protected as well. However, if there is that right to abortion, that's what happens when you have a right, is that you then see that there will be a right of action to sue for when that right is violated.
These are even newer things, right? Going down the road of seeing what this can lead to, you know, as we go on. So we are not talking about things that would necessarily happen immediately, but we're talking about things that the first time somebody sues for something, the first time someone tries to seek legal action, then the judges would have to determine that, well, okay, you're right, the Constitution now says this, then you would win, whereas they wouldn't win before. It's not like overnight all these laws will go away. It's just that as time progresses and cases move forward, they will be ruled against religious objections because of this Constitution. Is that accurate? Am I saying things well?
So you are correct that this is not immediate, but I would counter that this won't take much time at all. Okay. We do believe that the organizations that are backing these kinds of amendments that are popping up across the country are very organized. And we believe that they're holding off on this kind of litigation until they can win a big state like Ohio, so that then they can't have Ohioans who see the writing on the wall, say, look, this litigation and these kinds of legislative statutes are being passed here in this other state. This is why you shouldn't vote for this. So instead, what we are seeing, however, is that in Michigan, where this amendment did pass, we are seeing the push to remove parental notification. And even though we're seeing that push, still, when the Cincinnati Inquirer talked to Kelly Copeland, I believe is her name, she stated that they asked, did you guys, when you were drafting this amendment, consider at all the role of parents in these difficult decisions like abortion? And her response was, not really. Not really.
Really. Not really. I think most people know how important parental roles should be in decisions like this. What have we not talked about yet that you really want to push, that let our audience know that these are the kinds of things, that this is what is going to happen to Ohio in a year or two if this amendment passes, that most people just are not aware of?
Yeah. So I think it's important for everyone voting in this upcoming election to be aware that, as you stated, this goes even further than Roe by removing the undue portion of the case law that we have seen from Casey and Roe that says that you cannot have an undue burden at certain points in the pregnancy. This instead takes it a step further by saying that you could have no burden before viability, and you can maybe pass legislation that would protect the unborn life after viability, but it really won't make a difference because we are shifting the deciding capacity to the doctor, who gets to decide if there is a reason that the pregnancy should not continue. And unlike Ohio statutory language, which says that this is very specific, it has to be for bodily injury, for real danger to the woman's organs. Instead, we see in this amendment that the doctor is allowed to decide this for the health of the woman, not the life of the woman, the health. And as has been stated in previous podcasts, this is language that can extend to financial concerns, social concerns, familial concerns. It can extend to a situation where we have depression. And so, you know, right now in Ohio's language, there is protection that this cannot be imposed as an abortion for the health and life of the woman if it is merely something related to a mental issue or a circumstance. Instead, what we have is that this goes further from Roe to allow no burden can be imposed against those that are performing or assisting in an abortion, and the abortionist gets to decide if the abortion must take place for the health of the woman. And again, you know, I know that many who tune into your podcast probably are very interested in the wins that we have already had for protecting women in Ohio. This would do away with the current heartbeat law, and it would also be in direct contravention to a statute that I found on the books where Ohio declares that childbirth, it is the public policy of the state of Ohio to prefer childbirth over abortion to the extent that it is constitutionally permissible. We are a pro-life state. We're a pro-family state. We're a pro-woman state. And what this amendment would do is completely wreak havoc on the statutory scheme of Ohio.
Wow. So, Rachel, a lot of people listening today, many of them are probably already on board. What we need is help on educating our friends, right? So how do we convince someone else that has objections? Do you have any tips for how does a person have a conversation with their friend who doesn't know about this and be believable? You know, part of the issue is it's true that most people, if they understand what this does, they're going to be against it. But we have to get them to believe us when we say it's going to take away parental rights. It's going to take away medical standards. It's going to take away religious freedom and just favor in almost every circumstance the desires of the people who make money off of abortions to do whatever they need for that. How do we help convince the skeptical public that this is true?
So as people are engaging in conversations with their neighbors who may not feel the same way that they do about abortion and about how important it is to protect women from the dangers of abortion, they may find that it helps to talk about how Ohio has many provisions in statutes that function almost like the federal Hyde Amendment, and that it protects Ohio's funding from being diverted to abortion providers. And many of those statutes would be in jeopardy of being overturned, because once something becomes a right, then it becomes almost the public's role to have to make sure that those rights are upheld. We're all in this together to make sure that everyone's rights are respected. And so that may include diverting public funding, our taxpayer money, to pay for abortions. And even if someone may not be on the same page that we are as a pro-life advocate, they still may have issues with public funding going to abortions, grants being granted to abortion providers. Additionally, it's important to have people understand that when we look at health and safety regulations, these things are important for the pregnant woman because they protect her, they keep the space safe, there are regulations in place for the abortion process that prevent this industry from taking advantage of a woman who is in a very vulnerable position. This includes the sanitation code. This includes things that make sure that these buildings are up to code, are sanitary, are healthy, that the woman is being treated in a safe manner. It even comes down to that every abortion provider has to have a sign on the wall that states very explicitly that no one can force you to have an abortion. Not a parent, not a boyfriend, not a husband, no one. Under Ohio law, an abortion cannot be legally performed on anyone regardless of age unless she voluntarily consents. This is in big caps that every abortion provider has to have. But from sanitation requirements to building codes, all of these things cost money. Cremating and interring the fetal remains are all things that are done at the expense of the abortion provider under Ohio law. So anything like this that costs the abortion provider money or that penalizes the abortion provider by not being allowed to apply for a grant for public funds or be diverted to public funds, all of this can be challenged as unconstitutional once abortion becomes something extended as a right, making every woman vulnerable to the abortion industry, woman and child.
And you're right. Anything that's going to affect the bottom line of the money they're trying to make, they're going to try to say is going to be unconstitutional. And that's exactly what the window that this opens up. Well, thanks for talking with us today, Rachel, about issue one in November, that it would go so much further than Roe ever did. It would enshrine a right to abortion for any reason, virtually up until birth, make it much easier for women to be trafficked and coerced into having abortions, take away parental notification rights, even threaten conscious protections for healthcare workers, and so many other things. Well, thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me on.
I want to thank all our viewers and listeners for tuning in on this episode of our Being Pro-Life series. Head to the website to view all the links talked about on this episode at www.catholicaoc.org/beingprolife. Thank you again for joining us today. I look forward to being with you next time.